Blog Talk Radio.
Israel have fallen short in your sight.
Open your eyes and see. Open your eyes and see. Open your eyes.
Now, I warn anybody by way of the internet to stop me at what point they think I'm making an error or at what point they think I'm adding something to the book or at what point they think I'm diminishing from the words of the Almighty. I want them to stop me, not only the brothers by way of the internet, but any brothers and sisters in the class that feel as if I might be making a slight error because I'm only human. And we all can make mistakes. I need them to really stop me at that point. According to Genesis 1, we're going to start at the 26th verse.
Genesis chapter 1, verse 26. And Elohim said, "Let us make man in our image, after our likeness. And let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the fowl of the earth, of the air, and over the cattle, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth." So Elohim created man in his own image.
Notice it didn't say Elohim created man in their own image. It didn't say an Elohim created man in our own image. But it says, so Elohim created man in his image. And the word his is a personal pronoun, letting you know that you don't have three or four entities speaking at once. A lot of Christians in particular like to teach that Elohim means more than one. Well, it does mean more than one when it's used in a plural sense. But when it's used in a singular sense, it means one. Just like the word boy, it's a plural word. But if I say that boy in the red shirt, then I'm talking about a particular boy. If I say King George, I'm talking about a particular king. But if I just say king, then it could be any number of individuals. But when we say Yahweh our Elohim, then we have displayed the exclusiveness of the Almighty. Yes, we show that he was singular to us and that he is our Elohim. Yes. And although he has many powers, although he has many attributes, although he has many strengths, he's only one Elohim. And he told us that he is one. According to Deuteronomy 8:6-4, it says, Hear, O Israel, Yahweh Elohim, Yahweh is one Elohim. He's not no three or four, so don't be mistaken by that. Even the Christ in the New Testament said the greatest law is, Hear, O Israel, Yahweh Elohim, Yahweh is one Elohim. So he had no problem in recognizing and extinguishing the Almighty as only being one. But all of our people seem to have this problem. But it said, and Elohim said, Let us make man in our image, after our likeness, and let them, who is them? Mankind, am I correct? Man, let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the fowls of the air, and over the cattle, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth. So the Almighty says, not only are we going to make man, but we're going to make mankind. And when we make them, we're going to give them dominion over the fish of the sea, the fowls of the air, and over the cattle, and over every creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth. But did he give him dominion over the beast? It said he gave him dominion over the fish. It said he gave him dominion over the fowls. It said he gave mankind dominion over the cattle and over the creeping things. But did it say he gave man dominion over all the beasts of the earth? And people have called me and let me know that Satan was somewhat different than everyone else, and that's why he was able to deceive the woman, because he was a beast. And the Creator never gave mankind dominion over the beast. And he was not only a beast, but he was the most subtle beast. Subtle means he has the ability to work subtlety. Subtlety is being sagacious and clever and cunning. And he was the most sagacious, he was the most subtle beast of the field. But we tell them, no, you're mistaken. We say that although this is not what you're reading right now, we would clearly show you that man collectively was given dominion over the fish, over the fowl, over the cattle, and over every beast that's on the earth, including the serpent. Now, where do we get this? As we read further, it says,
So Elohim created man in his own image. In the image of Elohim created he him. Male and female created he them. And Elohim blessed them.
He blessed them.
And Elohim said unto them, Be fruitful.
Now, fruitful don't mean to have babies, as many of you all suspect. The word fruitful just means to be able to conceive. There's a lot of women that are fruitful that never conceived, that never multiplied, that never had babies, but they were fruitful. And the Most High gave these commandments. He said, be fruitful and multiply. Now, the word multiply means to increase in numbers. So to be able to increase in numbers, of course, you first have to be what? Fruitful. So then you must be what? Fruitful and multiply. And replenish the earth. The word replenish means to fill again. Now, Adam, as we know it, was the first man that ever came on the face of this earth. The Almighty would not have said to him to fill the earth again. So we know that at one time there were dinosaurs. We know there were other creatures, and there were other types of creatures on the earth. But here the Creator tells Adam to replenish the earth. And then he says,
And Elohim blessed them.
And he said, Subdue it, which means bring it under your dominion. Bring it under your subjugation.
And subdue it, and have dominion over the fish of the sea.
Notice, have dominion over the fish of the sea.
And over the fowl of the air.
And over the fowl of the air.
And over every living thing that moveth upon the earth.
Now we have the fact that the Almighty included beasts, and let us know that mankind collectively were given dominion over the beasts as well. For he said, over every, now what is every living thing? What would that exclude? Not what it would include, but what would it exclude? The point of the matter is it wouldn't exclude anything, would it? But it would include everything that's living, including the serpents and the other beasts as well.
And Elohim said, behold, I have given you every herb bearing seed, which is upon the face of all the earth, and every tree in which is the fruit of a tree yielding seed. To you it shall be for meat.
In other words, I want you to be able to grow. I want you to be able to be healthy. I want you to get the living organism out of everything. So I've given you every herb, not every vegetable. The word vegetable is not mentioned. All the vegetables, as we know, which pertain to its herbs. And he said, I've given you every herb bearing seed, which is upon the face of the earth, and every tree in which is the fruit of a tree. The Almighty made sure he let us know that these fruit yielding trees must yield seed. To you it should be for meat. Why? It has germination power. It has the power to reproduce and germinate. And therefore it's a living organism. See, life and death cannot be maintained at the same time. You cannot maintain a living organism by eating dead foods. So all them cooked steaks and nice white rice with the brown gravy and greens cooked so that they just fall apart in your mouth, they might taste good, but they don't serve you no value as far as nutrition is concerned, because everything in it is dead. There's no living organisms. There's no living enzymes. You're eating dead waste that has a beautiful taste. But in everything that the Creator created in this society, the devil has a counterfeit. The Almighty has his Sabbath, so does the devil has his. The Almighty has his Messiah, the devil has his. The Almighty has his nutritional foods that he has for us to eat, and so do the devil has his. And whose tastes the best? The devil's. I walked in a store the other day and walked past that little bakery and seen them lime pies and I had to just stare and fight with myself for 10 minutes. The lady, can I help you? Can I help you? And I'm just, no. A fight was going on. And 10 minutes I stood with my wasting, but I won. I won the battle because I was able to walk away and look back and say, hey, I didn't need it. But it is hard. It's hard to walk away from them nice T-bones you see and whatnot. But as we read further, it says,
and to every beast of the earth,
every beast of the earth,
and to every fowl of the air, and to everything that creepeth upon the earth, wherein there is life, I have given every green herb for meat. And it was so. And Elohim saw everything that he had made, and behold, it was very good.
All right, now here is where the diverse teaching come in. Part of diverse teaching is that man was not given dominion over the beast. Well, here you see it. It was. And you clearly see that man was given dominion over everything. And then there's another subtle move that was made. They say, well, this man here that was created in the first day, this is not Adam. This man was created. Adam was formed from the dust of the earth. They say Adam did not come into existence until the second verse, the second chapter in the seventh verse, where it reads, and Yahweh Elohim formed man of the dust of the earth and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and man became a living soul. And Elohim planted a garden eastward in Eden, and there he put the man whom he had formed. And so here's the difference, Alicia. They say Adam was created not created, but he was formed. They see this other thing, this mankind that wasn't a man, he was just mankind, he was created on the first week in the first chapter. And we soon see the folly of that because all we have to do is notice two points of view. When we start reading the second chapter, the first verse, it says,
thus the heavens and the earth were finished.
Thus the heavens and the earth were finished. Now, before we read any further, with all due justice, is anyone right here under the impression, and I won't say erroneous impression because it might be the right impression, but is anyone under the impression that this first man that's created in this first week is anyone other than Adam? Now, if you think it's someone else, then raise your hand and we can explore it. But thus far, I will prove that this first man is Adam. Because as we begin to see the second chapter, the first verse, it reads,
thus the heavens and the earth were finished, and all the hosts of them.
Now, did the Almighty tell a lie? Well, there's great prominent Kohanim around the United States and rabbis and teachers and say, Yahweh told a lie. Because everything was not finished. He created something else after he created man on the sixth day of the week. And we say, Yah, it's not a man that he should lie, neither the son of a man that he should repent. As it says, so should be done, and as he has spoken, so should it come to pass. The Almighty hadn't lied at all. Even Paul had enough sense to say, let Elohim be true and let every man be a liar. If the process of me teaching, if I teach anything that's against the words of the Most High, I want you to know that the Most High did not make an error. I made the error. I made the slip of the tongue. I made the indiscretion, but the Almighty is not capable of making a mistake. That's something that he does not have in his mechanics. He cannot make a mistake. Now, he can do something evil, and doing something evil is not a mistake because he's the one that created evil and he created good. But he did not create a mistake, and he did not make a mistake. And the second chapter, the first verse says, thus the heavens and the earth were finished. What does that mean? Finished. Well, the word finished with that implied that everything is done. It is finished. Or in Dutch, it is finished. Thus the heavens and earth were finished, and all the hosts of them, that means all that inhabit the heavens and the earth, it's already complete. And on the seventh day, Elohim ended his work which he had made. And he rested on the seventh day from all his work which he had made. Now, what does that mean? Again, he say he ended everything. Did he lie there? Did he make a mistake? Well, a lot of people say we made a mistake because, Alicia, I was up the other day and I seen it rain. And that rain wasn't on this earth before. And we say, no, son, you're mistaken. All the rain that you have is old water that evaporated back into the heavens and came down again. And the water that you're drinking today is yesterday's urine. It has been dissipated, went back in the form of vapor, and came back, recycled. There is nothing new under the sun. Nothing new. No. Nothing on the face of this earth is new. So we're all in one agreement here that he ended all his work which he created and made. And the third verse.
And Elohim blessed the seventh day and sanctified.
Now, why did he bless the seventh day? What's the significance of the seventh day? That's the day he had finished everything. Everything was complete. And he refreshed himself in that day, and he blessed that day And he sanctified it from all, and he rested from all this work which he had created and made. Go ahead.
These are the generations of the heavens and of the earth when they were created.
These are the generations of the heavens and the earth when they were created, in the day that Yahweh Elohim made the earth and the heavens. So he's constantly reiterating on the fact that he already made everything, that it's complete, that it is finished, that there's nothing else. He gets real redundant here because he's going to constantly repeat the fact that everything is already created and made. And many theologians around the country say the book of Genesis, the second chapter, is a totally different chapter altogether. Well, we know it's a different chapter. In Hebrew, they didn't have any chapters. There was one sequence of events, no chapters. So even though it's a different chapter, this is not a different scenario. This is not a different creation. All the second chapter is, it's letting you know, as the fourth verse says, that these are the generations of the heavens and the earth when they were created in the day that Yahweh Elohim made the earth and the heavens.
And every plant of the field before it was in the earth.
Notice every plant of the field. You had plants of the field that were not yet in the earth.
And every herb of the field before it grew.
And all the herbs of the field, they were in a state of total dormancy because they hadn't started growing.
For Yah Elohim had not caused it to rain upon the earth.
Because nothing had grew. That's reading mankind, and scientists today are exploring the galaxies, exploring the planets, looking for a planet that has water. That's the element that they're looking. They're looking for water, H2O, because they know the Creator let us know that nothing grows without water. Nothing. And he let us know this very early, that even though these things on the earth, even though they were created, nothing grew because of the most precious thing on earth, the H2O was not present. And the scripture said he had not caused it to rain upon the earth because there was not a man to till the ground. He didn't have nobody yet here to till the ground. So why cause it to everything to start growing when there was nobody here to keep it in check? Nobody here to cultivate the earth. Nobody here to till it. So he didn't want to. So it says he had not caused it to rain because there was not a man to till the ground. But there went up a mist from the earth and watered the whole face of the earth. So he said even though there was not water raining from the heavens, because he didn't cause it to rain, because there was not a man to till the ground, and said he caused a what? A mist to go up from the earth. Now, did this mist grow up before it rained? Yes, it did. Did this mist come up from the earth before there was a man to till the ground? Yes, it did.
And Yahweh Elohim formed man of the dust of the ground.
He formed man of the dust of the ground.
And breathed into his nostrils the breath of life. And man became a living soul.
Right here, the same Hebrew word for man that's in Genesis, the first chapter, is in Genesis, the second chapter. The same definition of man. Nothing different. Not a man, and then they got mankind. The same word is used. And what word is that? Huh? Adam. Well, you have two Adams in Hebrew. One Adama, one Adam. One means red, and one means earth. And I'm here to say the one that pertains to man is letting you know that he came from the earth. Keep reading.
And Yahweh Elohim planted a garden eastward in Eden. And there he put the man whom he had formed.
And then they said, well, see, again, he mentioned the fact that he formed this man. Here twice he said, I formed this man, but I created the other. So I say, so Adam was formed, he was not created. And they say, yes, and I taught this. Because my first teacher that first taught me that I was an Israelite, Hananiah, he taught this philosophy, and I taught it as well. And him and I were together almost inseparable, as Brother Dan can testify. As a matter of fact, I introduced Brother Dan to him and other people in the cities. I met him right after he got to Cincinnati. But we were together less than 2 years, and we departed. And this is the reason that we separated, because I could no longer teach that you had two different men. One man in the first chapter, which is a beast, and another man in the second chapter, which is Adam. I teach that Adam was in both chapters. And when the Almighty gave me the true significance of that whole scenario, I went around to everyone that I taught this to and told them that I was in error, that I made a mistake, and that I'm here to correct myself. But do you know, most of the people I went around to tell that I made an error, they were upset with me. They were angry with me. A lot of people would rather live a lie than confess the fact that they might have made a mistake. And they're not ready to say, I made a mistake, so they'd just rather continue to lie. But I don't mind saying that I made a mistake, because the Creator won't let me grow and go further until I'm able to put the past behind me. So sometimes you have to correct certain things to put it in back of you so you can go forward. Until those things are corrected, in life you can't go forward. There's certain things in our life that must absolutely be corrected in order to go forward, or you will always be in a state of limbo. Amen.
Verse 9. And out of the ground made Yahweh Elohim to grow every tree that is pleasant to the sight and good for food, the tree of life also in the midst of the garden, and the tree of knowledge of good and evil.
Now, before we go any further, I want you to hold this page and go to the book of Genesis, the 5th chapter. Because my teacher Hananiah told me that Adam was formed,
parted, and became into four heads. The name of the first is Pisan, that is which compasses the whole land of Havilah, where there is gold.
That's over in Africa.
And the gold of that land is good. There is bdellium and the onyx stone. And the name of the second river is Gihon. The same is it that compasses the whole land of Cush.
That's over in Africa as well.
And the name of the third river is Hedekeb. That is it which goeth toward the east of Assyria.
Africa again.
And the fourth river is Euphrates.
It is Euphrates. So we see that mankind came from Africa. They were black. And we know they're black because if the first man was white, we would never have people of color, because you can't get anything from white. Two white people can never produce anything darker than themselves. That's totally impossible. You can't get no two white tigers together and come up with a yellow or black one. No, no. You can't get no two white people together and come up with a black man. That's totally impossible. White is not even a color. White means the absence of all color. That's mean in the summer when you want to stay cool, you wear something white, because white reflects all color. Reflects means there's a conflict, there's a fight. It's not absorbed in. They are not made to go together. Just like the white man, you were not made to go together. White and black was not made to go together. It's a conflict. White repels all colors, but in the winter when you want to get warm, you wear something black or dark, because black absorbs all colors, because all colors came from it. Everything came from black. Black didn't come from nothing. How can black come from brown? Black come from red. Black come from white. Black is the raw color. Everything comes from black. And like they say, the blacker the berry, the sweeter the juice. That's just a natural foreign fact.
Verse 15. And Yahweh Elohim took the man and put him into the Garden of Eden to dress it, and to keep it.
All right, to keep it tilled, to dress and keep it.
And Yahweh Elohim commanded the man, saying, of every tree of the garden thou mayest eat freely, but of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil thou shalt not eat of it. For in the day that thou eatest thereof, thou shalt surely die.
The tree of the knowledge of good and evil thou shalt not eat of it, for in the day that thou eatest of it, thou shalt surely die. Now, is this a sex act? Is this tree a real tall black man dressed in a white suit? Is this tree called the serpent? No. In order for us to get all that in there, we'd have to just put it there. Now, we have that ability with our creativity. We can just put it there. But you would have to struggle putting it there, because it's certainly not what it's saying.
And Yahweh Elohim said, it is not good that the man should be alone. I will make him a helpmeet for him.
No, the Creator said, it is not good that man should be alone. He said, it's not good. Therefore, I will make him a helpmate for him, because I don't think, he didn't say I don't think, he said, I know it is not good for man to be alone. What's the practical reduction from that? If it's not good for man to be alone, it means it's bad for man to be alone. It's bad. He began to buy all kind of funny little movies and sit in the house by himself. You understand? His hands get real strong and whatnot. And other things. It's not good at all that man should be alone. That's not what he made man for. But when we turn to the New Testament, if we go to the book of, hold this page for a minute now. If we go to 1 Corinthians. Let's go to the 7th chapter. Let's see what the New Testament says about it being good for man to be alone. It says in the book of 1 Corinthians, the 7th chapter, the very, very first verse. Notice what it says, and there's no question mark behind this. This is not a question. This is a statement, a doctrine. Now concerning the things wherein ye wrote unto me. This is Paul speaking. You wrote unto me. Is it good for man? He said, for now concerning the things wherein ye wrote unto me, it is good for a man not to touch a woman. So he's not answering a question. He's making a statement. That's not a question he's asking. He's making a statement. He said, it is good for man not to touch a woman. Now, what do we understand here? If it was good for man to not touch a woman, the Almighty would have never made a woman. Why would he make something and put it on this earth for man to go fumbling and mumbling with when it's not even good for him to touch it? It makes no sense, because it's a total contradiction against his word. But again, as I teach, the whole New Testament is a total contradiction against his word. Just wanted to see this foolishness that Paul is saying. But I got to give him his respect. He goes on to the next verse that says, nevertheless, to avoid fornication,
let every man have his own wife, and let every woman have her own husband.
In other words, there's only one reason that I'm sanctifying marriage, says Paul, and that is to avoid fornication. Now, if you're strong like me, said Paul, and can do without a woman, it's best that you never even touch her. Don't even touch her. But if you're kind of weak, like the vast majority of the normal men that the Creator created on the face of the earth are, then to avoid fornication, get married. Now, when the Creator created the woman, he didn't say a thing about, I'm making her so you don't commit fornication. He said, I'm making a woman because it is not good for man to be alone. And y'all get yourselves together and be fruitful and multiply, replenish the earth, and have a family and raise up a godly seed. Now, that was the Almighty's purpose. In order to serve him the way that we should, we need to be brought up in families. Every time you raise a child as an individual, he'll not function as a family. He can't function, period, because he was never brought up in a family like that. How can one man raise up a family, or one woman? Man told me the other day he didn't have a father and mother because his aunt took him in, and her and his uncle raised him up. His uncle treated him just like their own kids, and that's when he's strong today. He said his uncle and aunt had three kids, and him and his two sisters came, and nobody walked in the house could tell any difference between any of the children. They didn't know their own children from theirs because they treated them the same. Now, this is what the Creator wants. If you're going to make a distinction in the children, then you have a mental problem. You need some counseling, because when the Scripture says, children are the heritage of Yahweh, and the fruit of the womb is his reward. That's his reward. So when you show favoritism, discrimination against and prejudice against little ones, you're actually showing prejudice toward the creation of Yah. He said, this is my heritage. This is my blessing. This is my reward. So we never want to show any distinction when we marry a woman that got five kids. We got to accept them all as our own and treat them accordingly, or don't get married. If you got to have the difference, don't get married. I know one man, he used to take his son everywhere, leave the other woman's children at home. Now, that didn't make good sense, did it? So you know what the other kids did? They start hating him and the other son, just like Joseph's other brothers started hating him because his mother was showing favoritism toward him. And that made the rest of them hate him. So you never show favoritism against the youth. Now, getting back to Genesis, the second chapter, just wanted to show you some of the nonsense in this New Testament that some of our people value as something that's holy. What verse did we leave off on?
We started verse 19.
Yes.
And out of the ground, Yahweh Elohim formed every beast of the field.
Every beast of the field.
And every fowl of the air.
And every fowl of the air.
And brought them unto Adam to see what he would call them. And whatsoever Adam called every living creature, that was the name thereof.
Now, if Adam was not given dominion over all the beasts of the field, then how could he have the ability to name them? And why were they brought to him by the Creator? And the Creator said, I want you to name everything. Now, if the creature and all the beasts had dominion over Adam, they'd be telling Adam what your name is. But it was just the other way, wasn't it?
And Adam gave names to all cattle, and to the fowl of the air, and to every beast of the field. But for Adam, there was not found an helpmate for him.
Adam didn't have no helpmate for him, right? Which means the Almighty didn't intend on Adam to copulate with no lambs and goats, like some of them hillbillies were doing down in the country. That was not what the Almighty intended. When he looked around at all the animals, the cats and dogs and goats and lambs, it said he didn't find no suitable helpmate for Adam. Am I correct?
And Yahweh Elohim caused a deep sleep to fall upon Adam, and he slept. And he took one of his ribs and closed up the flesh instead thereof. And the rib, which Yahweh Elohim had taken from man, made he a woman and brought her unto the man. And Adam said, this is now bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. She should be called woman, because she was taken out of man.
So who named woman? We see that man named all the beasts. Why did the Almighty give man the prerogative to name the beast? Because a man was made in his own image and likeness, and the Creator had given man dominion over the beast. But now we see that there was a lady being formed, a woman being formed, and she was also brought to Adam. And Adam did what? Adam said what?
And Adam said,
this is now bone of my bone and flesh of my flesh. She should be called woman because she was taken out of man. So he named her as well, which means from the beginning, the Creator gave man dominion over the woman. So you got two things going for you. First of all, fellas, you were made a man, and the Creator made man over the woman. And then some of y'all were made husbands, and the husbands was placed over the wife. So you got two things going for you that's outstanding. Now keep reading. Then if you like Dan, you got three things because he's a moray too. You understand? Well, let's, yes, sir. Yeah.
Verse 24. Therefore shall a man leave his father and his mother, and shall cleave unto his wife, and they shall be one flesh.
Shall leave his father and his mother, and shall cleave unto his wife, and they shall be one flesh. Now, what does that mean? What if the man don't want to leave his mom and daddy? Can he have a successful union with his wife if he's not ready to leave them? Or what if she's not ready to really cut the cord with mother and daddy? Can she be a total full wife? You can't. You got to be ready to cut that abimbo cord. Got that past you, didn't you? Go ahead, brother. I'll try to get it past you.
And they were both naked, the man and his wife, and were not ashamed.
They were both naked, the man and the wife, and were not ashamed. Now, here's where another slip comes. They said, well, they were not ashamed because they hadn't had sex yet. And the act made them ashamed. And I said, no, it's not the act of sex that made them ashamed. What made them ashamed is when they ate of the tree of good and evil. Because really, let's be quite frank. Can you take a little baby boy and his little sister and put them in a bathtub together? Will they bathe together? You just throw both their little naked butt in the tub and give them a bath and get them out and dry them, and they jump in the bed together and sleep and everything else, right? Am I right? Matter of fact, if you never show them no different, they can be 22 years old running out on that naked in front of each other. If you raise them that way, because morals is a learned behavior. It's not taught. I had a man come to my shop the other day, and he's agnostic. He's not an atheist. An atheist is a man that denies the existence of God, period. Agnostic of men, they don't deny it, but they say we can't prove it. And since we don't prove it, well, they're in a state of limbo. And this man, he's really more than agnostic because he always condemned the Almighty, always condemned him and laugh at people that serve of God. And, of course, he believed that we came from little apes and monkeys. And so he came in the shop the other day, and I asked him, I said, is it all right for a man to have a sexual relationship with his mother? What? Why'd you ask me that? Man got to be sick. He got to be sick to want to sleep with his mama. Insane. And I let him just carry on for a little while. And I said, well, I agree with you, brother. Well, why did you ask me that? I said, well, dogs and cats have sex with their mamas and sisters and brothers. Dogs and cats and bullfrogs and buzzards, snakes. They don't discriminate. I said, only one that discriminates who they have sex with is mankind. And I said, that's why we discriminate, because we have morals. That's the one thing that separated us from the Most High. Then he said, well, I was raised in a house by my grandmama. That's where I said, who was she? Well, she was a Christian. I said, where you think she got her values from? You raised up in a Judeo-Christian society. So all the values you got that's good came from by way of the scriptures, by way of our book. And you just latched on to them because if you didn't have morals, what would you do? You'd sleep with your daughter, your mama, anybody, because you're not taught you're not to do it. You would go in the store as a little baby, you pick up some, see some candy, what do? Pick it up and start eating it, right? Your mama had to spank your hand and say, no, son, this, you have to pay for this. Put this down now. If I don't pay for it, don't pick up nothing. They spank my hand, it swole up. Everything I seen, you understand? I thought it belonged to me. I got tired of them beating on the back of my hand. But some people have to train harder. But morals is a learned behavior. You're not born with it. And morals is not learned from having sex. Having sex ain't did have a sex keep a make a dog sew up some clothes and put it on him? You ever seen some dogs sew some underwear and start wearing it right after he got big and had sex? Huh? No. So we know that merely by you having sex does not teach you what? Morals. Right? If that was so, men wouldn't be having sex with their own babies and daughters and little children. Do you understand? So let's read that verse for 1 minute. Brother Moray Dan wanted to make a point. Yes?
Is it possible that man was born homosexual?
Well, I wouldn't. I can only speak for myself. No, any of y'all born homosexual? Some men were. To answer that honestly, some men, no, let me take that back. Were men born homosexual? No. Men were not born homosexuals. A lot of men think they were born homosexuals because they are attracted to other men. When I was a little bitty baby, I was attracted to big, not the little girls, I was attracted to all my mother's family, big women with big breasts. I was attracted, you understand? And that's my attraction. Didn't care who the woman was. But as I began to get older, I learned that you don't talk to married women. You don't hit on certain people. This is your first cousin. This is your sister. This is your aunt. These are your sisters and relatives. I learned that. And then I learned that you don't hit on married women. So I learned that. That didn't keep me from being attracted to them. Because we have some very attractive married women in here, right? And just because they are married does not keep them from being attracted, do it?
Amen. Amen.
Amen. Oh, okay. Hold on. No, stop. Stop. No more, please. It doesn't stop them from being attractive. And we all agree with that. But as we begin to learn morals, then we know that we turn ourselves off, right? Right? I didn't get no amen there. We turn ourselves off. We don't go. And likewise, when some men are born, well, there's a lot of men are born that's attracted to other men. But they don't succumb to their desires. They learn that their desires are immoral. So they never succumb to those desires. Now, are they homosexuals? No. Are some men born feminine? Yes. All men are feminine. But some are more feminine than others. Every woman here is masculine. But their femininity outweighs their masculinity. But we all have those hormones in us. Do you understand? But a man got to secrete a hormone. What's the name of it? Yes. That means that I don't want to damage it by trying to say it, but say it aloud. What is it called?
Testosterone.
Well, men excrete that much more than women, which means that men have a desire. They really have the sexual desires more than women. Men constantly think of sex all the time. Well, you all think about it sometime. Men, it dominates every time. Anybody, it's sex all in our mind every time. It's just filled with sex. Even when we get real old, all we do is sex. We're going to find Viagra or something, but it's just sex that dominates our mind. Well, woman, she'll just chill out and go. I just wanted you to know that. Men, you have to be a little more patient with them because they just got that stuff they just excrete and just make them just more, you know. That's just the way it is. And we know it's the truth because it's also true in nature. And we know that, as I've always taught, that it is consistent with universal laws, whether it's a bear, the tiger, the dog, the moose, you can always see the bull down south. You're allowed to see 20 cows and one bull. You know, and go in the woods, you might see 20 little deer and one moose. He ain't going to have no other moose around. He picked them 20 just for him. You understand? And you're going to always got a beta wolf and an alpha wolf. And some of the brothers in here are apples, alpha dogs. You understand? That's just the way it is.
Amen.
Let's read in some more.
Chapter 3, verse 1. Now the serpent was more subtle than any beast of the field which Yahweh Elohim had made.
He's more subtle than any beast of the field. He has more subtlety. He's more cunning, more clever, more sagacious than any beast, any of them. In other words, he's the smartest thing on this earth in the form of a beast. But he's not smarter than man. The Creator made man and gave man dominion over him. And that's mean he didn't approach that man. Y'all didn't want to hear this. He didn't approach the man just like that salesman ain't going to approach the man. Huh? Who is he going to try to isolate? They're going to catch y'all by yourself and tell you that you need a new transmission and a new motor. I seen them hit on it. See that? Hear that noise? Yeah. And all he's doing, he's making, yeah, that means you need a new transmission. Oh, okay. I told my husband something wrong with it. You give me another one. You understand? He's smiling because he went and found that man was not there. So let's keep everything in its proper perspective. Read again. He said what?
Now the serpent was more subtle than any beast of the field.
He was more subtle than any beast of the field. In other words, he was just a beast. No time is he called a man. Am I correct? The one in Genesis 1:26 was called man. Male and female, man. The one in chapter 2 is called a man. The serpent is never called a man, no time in the book. He's only addressed as a beast. And the most subtle of all the beasts of the field, go ahead.
Which Yah Elohim had made, and he said unto the woman, yea, hath Elohim said, ye shall not eat of every tree of the garden? And the woman said to the serpent, we may eat of the fruit of the trees of the garden, but of the fruit of the tree which is in the midst of the garden, Elohim has said, ye shall not eat of it, neither shall ye touch it.
Now, what it is? Somebody, and the good the kids went up with Bible sons, they taught that this tree was a woman's vagina. So I said, let's try to imagine that for a minute. So she's not allowed to wash it. She's not allowed to touch it. Come on, keep reading. See, it told her, whatever the tree of good and evil was, he said, thou shalt not do what? Eat of the tree. Neither shall ye touch it. Touch it. And I looked up the Hebrew word. It means something that you have to visibly do.
Lest ye die.
Lest you die.
And the serpent said unto the woman.
And the serpent said unto the woman.
Ye shall not surely die.
You're not going to die.
For Elohim doth know.
He does know.
That in the day ye eat thereof.
In the day that you eat thereof.
then your eyes shall be open.
Then your eyes shall be open.
And you shall be as Elohim.
Then you shall be as Elohims. You shall be as gods then, because your eyes are open.
Knowing.
And that's what we are today. We are as gods because now we know good and evil. And we can teach the difference between good and evil because our eyes are open. But someone that's a little baby, that's naive, that don't know, they can't teach the difference between good and evil. And merely having sex does not give you the ability to teach the difference of good and evil.
And when the woman saw that the tree was good for food.
She saw that was good for what? Food.
And that it was pleasant to the eye.
And that it was pleasant to the eye.
And a tree to be desired.
And a tree to be desired to make one wise.
She took of the fruit thereof.
She took of the fruit thereof.
And did eat.
And did eat.
And gave also unto her husband.
And gave also unto her husband.
With her. And he did eat.
And he did eat.
And the eyes of them both were open.
And the eyes of them both were open. Now, let me ask you a question. Who is the one that was deceived, the man or the woman? Well, if you say the woman, raise your hand. All right. Okay. Who say the man, raise your hand. Okay. Okay, nobody said. Who said both, raise your hand? Well, how are you going to raise your hand with both and you said the man was not deceived? Hello? I said the woman was not deceived. I said, who said the man was not deceived? Now, the hand went up here. Then I said, who said both of them? And I got several hands. That's impossible for both of them to be deceived if the man wasn't deceived. That's literally impossible, fellas. I just want y'all to know that. Well, still, in order for them both to be deceived, that means the woman had to be deceived and the man had to be deceived, which meant then that both were deceived. But if the woman was deceived and the man was never deceived, then it's impossible for them both to be deceived. Am I right? All right. We have a comment and a question before we go a little further. We don't want to lose nobody, and I told you to stop me. Yes, sir, go to the mic. We don't want to lose no one. We're getting some very critical areas.
Shalom, all right.
Shalom, brother.
I got a question. Was there a misconception between Eve and man, or man and Eve, because the Most High said, don't eat of the tree. Now, when she was encountered by the serpent, she told the serpent that not to eat it or touch it. Now, did she
told the serpent not to eat it or touch it?
Right.
Oh, she told the serpent. No, that's not what you read.
Right. She told the serpent.
No, you didn't read that, son. You're going a little too fast.
It says not a
but
serpent.
Whatever it is, we're going to cover it.
Okay.
And you'll get your answer in just a couple of minutes. Now, after I finish with this, because I think you're trying to read a little ahead.
Right.
All right. I think we're going to answer it. And after I finish with this chapter, if it's not answered, then go back to the mic, okay? Go ahead.
Verse 7. And the eyes of them both were open.
Eyes of them both were open.
And they knew that they were naked.
And they knew that they were naked.
And they sewed fig leaves together.
And they sewed fig leaves together. And when did they realize they were naked? When they ate of the tree of good and evil. Now, did they know they were naked when they had sex? Now, let's think. Is sex making them know that after they have sex, they jump, oh, we're naked? You understand? Just wanted you to absorb it. Just think about it for a minute as we read on. Go ahead.
And made themselves aprons. And they heard the voice of Yah Elohim walking in the garden in the cool of the day. and Adam and his wife hid themselves from the presence of Yahweh Elohim amongst the trees of the garden. And Yahweh Elohim called unto Adam and said unto him, Where art thou? And he said, I heard thy voice in the garden, and I was afraid, because I was naked, and I hid myself. And he said, Who told thee thou was naked?
Now notice the question he asked thee, then asked who told you you had sex, said who told you that you were naked? Go ahead.
Hast thou eaten of the tree whereof I commanded thee that thou shouldest not eat?
All right, no talking during the class, and we're going to have an opportunity for everybody to talk and make their comments and ask their questions. But sometime when you're talking, they're not able to hear properly, and that's a distraction because then there's questions that they might have that are already asked, answered, but they won't know it because they are preoccupied with a conversation. So we're not going to talk right during the course of the class. That's not how the classes are conducted, right? All right, let's keep reading.
And the man said, The woman whom thou gavest to be with me, she gave me of the tree, and I did eat. And Yahweh Elohim said unto the woman, What is this that thou hast done? And the woman said, The serpent beguiled me, and I did eat. And Yah Elohim said unto the serpent, Because thou hast done this.
Well, let's stop. Before we read a little further, I just want you to know what the New Testament says about who is deceived. Now, I agree with the vast majority of you. Adam and Eve were both deceived. They were both deceived. The first one, of course, was Eve and then Adam. But even though Eve was directly deceived by the serpent, Adam was deceived second-handedly. So he almost in worse shape. You let the woman deceive you, whom I gave to be with you for your helpmate. And you in bad shape, woman, because you let something that's not even a man deceive you. You let an animal deceive you. So you see, our women will listen to animals sometime before they listen to us, won't they? That's the moral of that story. They will listen to an animal before they listen to us. You understand? That's terrible, but that's the way it is. But I want you to hold this page for a minute because I want to show you what the New Testament said about who was deceived. Let's go to 1 Timothy in the back of the book in the New Testament. Let's go to 1 Timothy. Let's go to the second chapter. But hold that chapter that you have now in Genesis. We're coming back. Everybody have it? Notice what it says in the New Testament, the book that was ordained to be read and followed by those that profess to be Christians, that profess to be followers of the Christ of the New Testament. It says in 1 Timothy, the second chapter, the 11th verse, Let the women learn in silence with all subjection. That means all subjection to the man.
But I suffer not a woman to teach.
But I suffer not a woman to teach. So anytime you see women teaching and preaching in the church, they're going against God according to the New Testament. Because Christians are taught that all scriptures are given by the inspiration of God and is profitable for doctrine, reproof, correction, and instruction in righteousness. You understand? As also says Timothy, the second chapter. They also says that. But it says, But I suffer not a woman to teach, nor to what?
Usurp authority over the man.
Never to be over a man.
But to be in silence.
But to be in silence. So if you got a Christian wife, when does she fuss back at you? No, it didn't. No. Never. Never. It didn't say at home, sir. It said, but I suffer not the woman to teach, nor to assert authority over the man, but to be in silence. Then say a word about the church here, but to be in silence. For Adam was first formed, which is the truth, and then Eve, and that's right, he made man first because we were made in his own image and after our own likeness. So if the Most High made a man in his own image and after his own likeness, would he put a fox over us? To put a fox over us is to say that the fox is higher than the Most High. That's what you would have to say. Because we were made in his own image and you were made in his own likeness, so there's nothing on this planet Earth that's supposed to be over you. Nothing. Because you were made in the image and likeness of Yahweh. So there's not a woman born, not a dog, a frog, or calf, or nothing that's supposed to ever be over you. And if you ever put something over you, that's because you're less than a man. Weak. Silly, docile. I know you women don't like that. But the man, that's where it's supposed to be, right? Right? That's where it's supposed to be, women? Peanut Gallery is real quiet now here. But go ahead, finish reading.
And Adam was not deceived, but the woman being deceived was in transgression.
Now that's, look at that lie. Adam was not deceived. If he was not deceived, then why did he eat of a tree of good and evil if he wasn't deceived? He wasn't doing it in obedience. He wasn't doing it in subjection to the Almighty. He only ate of the tree because he was being deceived, being rebellious. And then I listen to Christians try to argue. I said, sir, he's not deceived. Well, no, he willfully disobeyed that. Well, if he willfully did it, he still would deceive, because anytime you go against the Almighty and think that what you're doing is profitable, think that